to call our City of Menlo Park Commission meeting to order on this beautiful spring, summer-like day in our city, April 14th. I call you to order, ask you to silence your cell phones, please. Join me as Reverend Steve Mayer, the First Baptist Church of Menlo Park, leads us in an invocation and in some of their pledge of allegiance. And before Reverend May begins, we just received word that a great Menlo Parker, John Spang, has just passed away. So, Reverend, maybe in your prayer you can remember his family. John did a lot of things, including all things East India. Some of us remember East India ice cream, helped redevelop the Alabama, and did a lot of other things. And I don't know what the circumstances of his passing have been, but we certainly want to remember his family in our prayers. And then, and please remain standing after Reverend May prays so that we can have a pledge of allegiance.
Well, Father, we thank you for these leaders here at City Hall. We know that they are here because you have ordained it to be so. We ask your richest blessings upon them and on their families. We pray that they would be wise like Solomon, that they would be ethical like Joseph, that they would be courageous like David, that they would be loving like Mary Magdalene, that they would be visionary like Nehemiah, that they would be passionate like Peter, that they would be willing to stand against opposition like Daniel, that they would be selfless like the Apostle Paul, and above all, that they would be sacrificial servants like Christ. We do pray for this family of this one who has gone on to be with you, Lord, for the Spain family. Thank you for the good works that have been done here in this city through him. And may you bless his family at this time. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Reverend May. For all you and your church does in our community, we're grateful. Last year, we had the privilege of celebrating this time 100 years, so I guess we're right at the 101st anniversary of First Baptist Church in our community. Thank you. And for those of you who haven't heard Reverend May sing, that's a special gift he has also. So, dual capacity there of the church. Thank you for your start. Mr. Knight, approval of the agenda. Any other changes?
Just the first item on the agenda, Mr. Randolph called today and they said he had a family issue that's going to keep him away today, so that item will be put onto the next meeting.
And just to order, if you don't mind, I'm going to go through item C through G on my report and then invite Kathy up for her item B, if that's okay.
Sure.
So there are any other agenda items other than Mr. Randolph won't be with us today, we'll reschedule him. We'll seek an approval to approve the agenda, a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Is there a second? All favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. I'm blessed. We have a lot of great recognitions, and let me go down to the podium to do that. If I may begin, I'd like to invite Dory Stone to join me, our Planning and Community Development Director. Dory is going to present and recognize our first quarter 2014 Business Recognition Award, a really neat program that's been instituted to recognize great businesses in our community.
Thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon. Today, we are very pleased to welcome some new neighbors, maybe not so new. They've actually been in our area for, I believe, 3 years now. Our business of the quarter is for Sunny's Barbecue. They have located their headquarters here. We are quickly becoming a refuge for corporate headquarters for restaurants, and we love it. We just need to encourage them to come up with a product that fits into the Winter Park mold and build a Sunny's locally so that we can all enjoy that food. Dominic Lasoco is here from the Sunny's organization to accept the award today. Sunny's, unbeknownst to me, until they sent me their information, really is a very active community program organization. They work with children, they work with school boards, they work with local communities, they share our strengths in the No Kids Go Hungry program, they provide summer character camps. They do so much for the community, and we are very proud to welcome them to Winter Park and to present this award to them.
Put it in a box.
He's wearing one of those things on the other foot.
Thank you. What a great place to eat, and we're so grateful that you are in our community and call Winter Park as your headquarters. Thank you for what you do. It's my privilege to invite Fire Chief Jim White to join me at the podium. Chief White has a very special award of merit to present today, and I'll let him tell the story and the recipients of this great award.
Mayor and Commissioners, thank you very much for a moment of your time this afternoon to recognize not only one of our city employees, but a great citizen here in Winter Park. If I could have Linda Humans and your family come up, and also Captain Tom Meadows, EMS supervisor. I'll try not to make you grab for your tissues when I go through this presentation, but most of us who are in this field, sometimes we really never see what happens with the training that we give citizens. We never see the benefits, especially of public education. We teach people how to use fire extinguishers. We teach people how to exit buildings when the building alarm might go off. Teach children how to get out of school when the fire drill happens. And we teach people CPR. And we teach people the Heimlich maneuver, how to resuscitate people when they might be choking on something. And usually those things never get practiced. Even as a professional, a lot of times we don't get to practice everything that we learn in training. But today I feel very special to be able to tell a story and to recognize Linda for not only one, but two times that she was able to use the training that we provided her over her years working here for the city. A number of years ago, Linda took training from us over 25 years ago in CPR. She's been certified in CPR for that long. And learning that from our then firefighter, Todd Meadows, teaching CPR, never thought that she would use the Heimlich maneuver to save first her son many, many years ago from choking. But then even more dramatically, just last October, his son, Wyatt, I'm drowning, was found lifeless at the bottom of the pool. And at a family function, was able to remove Wyatt from the pool and, through Linda's use of CPR, able to revive him. And he's here today with us. So obviously we would encourage all of you to learn CPR, to learn what to do when a situation arises. The worst thing you can have happen is to not know anything and not know what to do. Even if you only know to call for help, that's a huge, huge, makes a huge difference in the outcomes of these situations. Mayor, you always talk about trying to be the best, we are the best community, and learning CPR and placing AED devices throughout the community, training our employees and training as many people as we possibly can in these skills saves lives. It's not always about, it's about the EMS system. And the EMS system not only involves my paramedics and my firefighters, it involves the first responders, which are in most cases the general public and our employees that we have here in the city. So Linda, I want to present you with this Fire Chief Citizens Life Saving Award. I should be giving you several of these, but congratulations.
Chief White said, I came to work here approximately almost 26 years ago. And when the city offered that first CPR class, I was hesitant at best, but I knew I should take it because at the time, I thought I may need it at one point for my father.
few short weeks later, was doing dishes, looked over, and my son was at the counter there talking to me, and he'd gotten quiet. That's usually not a good thing when a child gets quiet. And he was choking. So I performed behind him. Out came the hot dog, and life was good. The next time I had to use it was actually on a coworker, right here in this building. One of our receptionists. She was answering the phone, and on that particular morning, for some reason, she didn't start to eat her bagel on the way to work. She later started to eat it at her desk. There was commotion going on, and I went up there, and one of the cashiers was dancing around in circles, and the other one was holding her neck. And so I did what Todd had taught me how to do, the homework, the second time. As God would have it, that wouldn't be the last time I'd need what I had learned in that class. On August the 10th, 2013, at about 2:30, we were at a family function. And this little guy right here, there were 8 to 12, 10 adults there, just the two kids. I'm from a family of seven, and I have about 25 to 50 great nieces and nieces and nephews. So just to have two children there and have something so tragic occur, it doesn't make you feel like a hero. But what I'm so grateful for is he was brought from the bottom of that pool. I did CPR with the help of my brother-in-law. We live out in the country, 10 to 15 minutes from the closest fire station. They came, he was airlifted to Arnold Palmer, and he stayed 4 days. I didn't see him for the first two. He was taking care of my older grandson. But when I walked in 2 days later, and he was sitting up in the bed with legs crossed, he said, "Hey, girl, you know you good." Brought tears to my eyes and great feelings toward God. And the next thing he said to me, "Grandma, Mommy and Daddy won't let me go swimming." And I said, "I bet they won't, honey." But as you can see, we don't have any repercussions from that day. We have 100% recovery. That's uncommon. It doesn't happen. Almost never. So I'm grateful. But the person I feel like should really get this reward today is Todd Meadows. Todd Meadows taught me that first CPR. And for him to know his job that well, that long ago, and impress upon me what would need to be done, and me be able to do it at a time in my life when I walk in the next room and don't know what I went there for. He did his job well. And my family's blessed for it, and we're eternally grateful. So thank you.
She didn't want a new one.
You know, guys, as we go into summer, if you don't know CPR, or you haven't renewed that course in a while, or if you're doing things, or you truly haven't had swimming lessons, do it.
Well said. Linda, thank you very much for being a living hero amongst us. We sure appreciate it. Chief Wright, thank you for the system of care. Obviously, it takes a city to be EMS. It's not just something that our firefighters do for us. It's all of us. Thank you so much. Wyatt, good to have him. Is that his brother with you there? Yeah, hi there. Hi there. It's good to have our youngest citizens amongst us. It's good to be in the city commission today, isn't it? My, the good continues. So I'm going to invite Dana Sussman, who's with our Florida Forest Service, and Drew Dennison, our city's urban forestry leader, to join me at the podium.
Dana has a special presentation for us today, and then I have a proclamation to make for what's coming up as Arbor Day. Dana, good to have you back with us.
Thank you. Thank you. This won't have the same emotional component that the previous award did, but it'll remind me when I have to go to CPR training that it's definitely worth it to refresh your skills. Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here to present the City of Winter Park with the National Arbor Day Foundation's Tree City USA Award and Growth Award for the year 2013. This is the 34th time the city has received the Tree City USA Award and the 22nd time the city has received the Growth Award, both amazing accomplishments. The Tree City USA program was started by the National Arbor Day Foundation in 1976 to recognize cities with comprehensive urban forestry programs. To receive this designation, a community must meet four standards: have a tree board or a tree care department, have a tree ordinance, have a community forestry program with an annual budget of at least $2 per capita, and to have an Arbor Day observance and proclamation, which I think we're doing today. The Growth Award was created in the year 2000 to recognize those cities that not only have good programs but are going above and beyond what many cities do with their urban forestry programs. And the two main requirements for that is you have to have been a Tree City USA for at least 2 years, and your budget has to be at least as much as it was the previous fiscal year. So again, it's an honor to be here today and present the mayor and commissioners and the urban forestry staff and the residents of Winter Park with these awards. And we've got the new flag, which will fly at City Hall.
Absolutely.
Oops,
yeah,
right, upside down. Okay.
Well,
good.
So you want to get our picture?
How beautiful.
If Dana and Drew would join me, we are blessed to proclaim April 25th as Arbor Day in the city of Winter Park. In 1872, J. Sterling Morton, and I believe that's the Morton of the fall, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
I think it is. Proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for the planting of trees. This holiday, now national in form, is called Arbor Day. It was first observed with the planting of more than 1 million trees in Nebraska and is now observed throughout our great nation, as well as throughout the world. Whereas trees can reduce the erosion by wind and water of our precious topsoil, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clean the air, produce oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife. Whereas trees are a renewable resource, giving us paper, wood for our homes, fuel for our fires, and countless other wood products. And trees in our city increase our property values, enhance the economic vitality of our business areas, and beautify our community. And wherever a tree is planted, a great source of joy and spiritual renewal occurs. And whereas Winter Park has been recognized as a Tree City USA by the National Arbor Day Foundation and desires to continue its tree planting ways, now therefore I, Captain Bradley, by virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor of the city of Winter Park in the state of Florida, do hereby proclaim Friday, April 25th, 2014, as Arbor Day in the great city of Winter Park, Florida, and urge all citizens to support efforts to protect our trees and woodlands, as well as our city's urban forestry program. Further, I urge all citizens to plant trees to gladden our hearts and promote the well-being of both our city as well as present and future generations. And it's my understanding, I believe we're having a special planting. Aren't we coming up?
It was supposed to be last Tuesday, but because of the weather, it's been rescheduled to May 1st, 10.
May 1st during the Earth Day celebration, but also that will be available for citizens who, if they want to pick up a tree, I know we make them available and our staff can teach you how to plant one. And Dana and Drew, I'd love to be able to present this great proclamation to you. Thank you, ladies. Appreciate what you do for us. Chief Riley, would you mind joining me at the podium for this proclamation? You know, crime knows no boundary, knows no city limit. And something as heinous as sexual assault is something that obviously we need to work together to to eradicate throughout our community as well as others. I'm going to invite former Commissioner Louie Diamani, the Executive Director of the Victim Service Center of Central Florida, to join me here. Commissioner, it's good to have you here today. I have a special proclamation that I want to present to you, which acknowledges our city's work and your cause, which is to decrease and or eliminate sexual assault within our Central Florida area. So it's an important activity that we do, but I'm declaring the month of April 2014 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in the city of Winter Park. Whereas rape, sexual assault, and sexual harassment impact our community is seen by statistics indicating that 1 in 6 women in Florida have been attacked in their lifetime, that 42% of women in Florida have experienced other forms of sexual violence, and 8% of assaults in 2010 involve male victims also. Whereas we must work together to educate our community about what can be done to prevent these assaults and to support survivors of this abuse, as well as the volunteers and staff of the Victim Service Center, for the great work that they do, and encourage both our citizens to speak out as well as to work together to avoid. Whereas the Winter Park Police Department assists in these efforts by collaborating with the Victim Service Center by providing free monthly women's self-defense and familiarization exchange classes, otherwise known as SAFE, that are geared toward any specific demographic. And whereas the Winter Park Police Department provides basic self-defense classes to community youth, as well as personal safety presentations and resources to all of our community members. And whereas with the dedication of both the Victim Service Center and the leadership of our police force and others, there's compelling evidence that we can be successful in reducing this type of violence in our city and throughout our country. Now, therefore, I, Kent Henry Bradley, by virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor of the great city of Winter Park in the great state of Florida, join the Victim Service Center of Central Florida to support their service programs and hereby proclaim the month of April 2014 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in the city of Winter Park, Florida. Commissioner, I know you probably have a few comments that you'd like to make about this. We'd love to be able to present this proclamation. I'll do that, and then we can get the comments, if that's okay.
Commissioners, thank you very much for having us here today and taking just a brief moment to recognize the month of April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. You know, at the Victim Service Center, our mission is to provide comprehensive services and resources to victims of sexual assault and violent crime and other traumatic circumstances. So we provide services to a wide array of victims throughout our community. But during the month of April, we go the extra mile and we try to draw awareness specifically to the sexual assault program. I don't know if you all realize what a great asset you have in your police department, but in working with them, we work very collaboratively, again, on the SAFE program, and we work with all 13 law enforcement agencies throughout Orange County. In fact, in the sexual assault front, we are what's called the Rape Crisis Center for Orange County as well as for Osceola County. And what that means is I have a team of master's level social workers, licensed mental health counselors. They're on call 24/7. And we also have a team of forensic nurses who can collect DNA evidence. And we have off-site facilities where if there is a sexual assault in Orange County, your law enforcement team immediately calls our hotline. By the third ring, one of our master's level counselors picks up that phone. And our standard is that we respond within 60 minutes. In reality, we respond within 33 minutes, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And it is just it's humbling for me to be part of such a fantastic organization. Part of our mission is to create community awareness. So each month, during the month of April, we make it our purpose to get out in front of various councils and commissions. In fact, I just came from the city of Orlando to run over here and do the same. But I want you to know that these services are here. They're available to your constituents. There's never any charge for those services. What's really cool about our organization is by the third ring, 24 hours a day, you're being spoken to or your call is answered by, again, a master's level counsel, a master's level mental health counselor or social worker. And that individual is the individual that you work with throughout the course of the duration of the service that you receive from us. In some cases, it's very short term. In some cases, it may be 2 or 3 years. But there's always that continuity of care. It's completely confidential. And again, we're there to help citizens and victims throughout our community. So I just appreciate the collaboration, the opportunity to be here with you today. I hope that I left each one of you one of these teal ribbons, and I hope that you will wear it, and people will ask you why the teal ribbon, and that is our universal symbol. It's a nationwide recognition of sexual assault awareness during the month of April. So you tell people, hey, We're trying to create some awareness for sexual assault, and more importantly, that we're trying to make a difference in our community, and we have resources, and we have compassionate, caring people here that are available to offer help, hope, and healing for those unfortunate victims within our community. So, again, I thank you so much for allowing this opportunity to be here, and thank you for your continued support.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. The Victim Services Center is an incredible resource in our community. Sadly, because of crime and other things, it has to be used. But when that occurs, you all try to make it as good as you can. Thank you very, very much. And I'm grateful to know that our police department works so closely with you, too. I know that for a fact. Thank you. Last but not least, I'd like to invite Dave Zusi up, our wastewater director, to join me at the podium here. We have another special proclamation. April is also Water Conservation Month. Whereas water is a basic and essential need of each one of us, whereas clean, safe, and sustainable water resources and supplies are vital to the City of Winter Park economy, our environment, and us as citizens, whereas the State of Florida, Water Management Districts, and the City of Winter Park are working together to increase awareness about the importance of the efficient use of water and advocating sound water conservation practices. Whereas the City of Winter Park and State of Florida designated April, typically a dry month when water demands begin to increase, as Water Conservation Month to educate our citizens and other users about the efficient use of our precious water resources. Whereas the City of Winter Park has joined Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs, the cities of Orlando, Windermere, Maitland, Ocoee, and Winter Garden in the third National Mayor's Challenge to be the most water-wise city. And whereas the City of Winter Park has encouraged and supported water conservation through various programs, and through our utility is committed to setting a good example for our citizens regarding water conservation, and whereas every business, industry, school, and citizen can make a difference when it comes to conserving water, now therefore I, Kent W. Bradley, by virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor of the great City of Winter Park and the great state of Florida, do hereby proclaim April 2014 as Water Conservation, maybe it should be Conversation Month too, I don't know, in the City of Winter Park, and urge all residents and businesses to help protect our precious water resources by practicing water-saving measures and becoming more aware of the need to save water. Dave, our city does a lot in this area, but it requires every citizen, just like Chief Wright said, to both be helping with EMS, but also to be on the lookout for ways that we can reduce our water consumption. Little ways like not keeping the water running when you're brushing your teeth in between, that saves a little bit of water, and watering according to the schedules that have been suggested, and even planting things that are more eco-friendly are all good. Dave, I'm sure you've got more to add to it. I'd like to present this proclamation to you, but we'd like to hear from you first if there's anything you'd like to say.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I appreciate the opportunity to just call attention to Water Conservation Month. It is something that we take very seriously in the city. We've got a lot of different initiatives, whether it's our land use code, our landscape ordinances, our irrigation ordinances, our conservation rebate programs, our free service that we offer to our citizens to adjust and correct their irrigation controls, just to touch on a few of the things we do. But thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you, Dave. Let me get this to you.
Citizens present may not know, but our water services are par excellence, not just in the quality, but in what we do, and it's because of Dave's leadership, the great team that he has working with us to really make a difference in water. What an important resource in our city, not just between the lakes, but what we drink and enjoy. So with that, I'm going to go back to the dais, and we'll complete my report. I'd like to invite Kathy Ramsberger to come and present to our commission. As you know, Kathy is the leader of the Downtown Performing Arts Center.
One of our great residents, Winter Park residents, who has been incredibly active and involved, is our own Jim Pugh. And it's good to have Winter Park resident Jim Pugh here today. I know supporting you in your presentation. I know you have a few others that, if you choose to introduce, that will be to you. But Kathy, update us on how we may be able to enjoy this great new center and what our roles may be into the future.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for the invitation to present the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts to you today. We actually have some of their donors in our team, not only Jim, but Donnie Emmerman, Earl Quittington, are two of our board members and donors, and they've given us thousands of hours of volunteer time. And actually, the Sun's Barbecue was one of their first donors. And so they were one of our first companies that actually participated in this, and it was a very generous, gracious gift. So we've invited you to come and see the project, and some of you have had the chance to come, and it's an open invitation, but we'd really love for you to come and see it. And the reason why we wanted to come and speak to the council is this has been a regional dream of our community in seven counties. And if you think about the Kennedy Center and Lincoln Center, the Art Music Center, the Art Center, it's not the city's art center, it's the region's art center. And so thank you for letting us come and make a presentation today. So when we started the project, the one thing that Jim actually said, if I'm going to do this, I want it to be for everybody, and also the mayor guided it as well. And ultimately, when the county commission participated in, why can we build an art center and really have the leadership to stick with something with conviction? What's our business? And our business is to make a very accessible art center for everyone. Our mission happens to be it's about providing an inspirational, creative place where people love to be, where people love to work. It doesn't really say too much about the arts. The mission is really about placemaking. And great regions actually surround themselves with these types of projects. Given that a project like this is immensely complicated, they take about 25 years to do. And our project is one of 37 projects around the world. What qualifies that is the centers that we're building, they qualify by having 4,000 seats. We have arts education initiatives within the regional, and they actually program the center. And so there's some businesses that come in and they rent the facility and put a season on, but these art centers that I'm talking about, they actually get to know the audiences in the region, and they really try to expose many different types of forms of program to bring audiences together. So you don't have to live in the South to love country music. You just have to be exposed to it, just like opera. You don't have to be wealthy. You just have a chance to grow up with it. So when we started the project, the idea was, how do you do something that is such a large idea that philanthropy is going to follow it? And the idea started with a public-private partnership. And elected officials, along with great leadership, you set the policy, you set the vision, and philanthropy will follow that. And great cities are built by philanthropy, but it all starts with elected leadership, kind of turning over the car keys and saying, let's do this together. And they do. So that was the driving factor about our nonprofit. It's a private nonprofit. And the big idea is that there's 9 acres, and there's 3 different commercial paths, and the non-school generated property tax and the ground lease and sale of those commercial buildings goes into a cultural trust to help operate the art center. Cities grow to art centers. Communities grow to art centers. So we're always working on a sustainable model, but every performing arts center, like every hospital, always raises money every year, and we want to, because the money raises, and we do. Strong leadership is key. This project has had the chance to kind of waver a little bit just because of economic conditions. And you have to have leadership that has got the conviction to stay the course, and we have stayed the course. We raised about $80 million because of the business we started, and our board wasn't about to change the business, and so we're keeping with the program. And then the other place, our community leaders and our elected officials have been absolutely instrumental. And Commissioner Bosigo actually participated a great deal with helping us advance the project as well. Communication is important. We have a 7-county grassroots effort. We have a group called the CERPA. It's like our host committee that you'd have in the Olympics. This is to have advocates. People don't know where an art center is, but we don't have one. Bob Carter Road Hall. People can belong to this art center, and that's what's really key. And so we've actually gone relationship with the Bean Corps around the country, around the 7 counties, and we had over 10,000 signatures on that piece. And media reports is important. Here's a list of our board of directors, and it's a board that is great advisors to the staff, but also their leaders in philanthropy. The facility itself, the entire 9 acres are two major city blocks. The yellow large rectangles are the commercial properties. One's a 250-room hotel. Another one is a 300,000 square foot office building, and one on the back side of the building happens to be a mixed-use development. So that can actually be education time and youth housing. Stage one, where it's red, the building was intended to be built all at one time. In 2008, we were just $16 million away from funding the entire project 4 years before it was open. That's how long we did. And then 2008 gave us a curveball, and one of the funding sources was delayed. $120 million was delayed. And here's where the conviction came in of our leadership from Jim, is do you change the building and do something different? If you do, your mission changes, which means your business changes, along with your business model. And we really studied the business model because we wanted to do it right. This is a 200-year building. And the building is owned by the city, but the nonprofit, which is supported by the Legion, operates the building. And so all the money that we raised from philanthropy and from the our public sources were focused on one business where we started. So they said, let's go ahead and cut the building in half. And then Jim said, it's not going to, somebody said, it's not going to look very good. And then Jim said, good. Because if it didn't, it would never get finished, which is true. So here we are. We built that in 2011. We're in our 33rd month of construction. The first phase was $230 million. We've got over 330 companies working on the project. They're very complicated. These buildings take about 36 months to design and about 33 months to actually build. So they're very technical buildings. This is stage two. It's a major theater, and it's got rehearsal hall and other public spaces. And in this project, our goal is to actually have this funded and break ground 3 months after we open the center, which actually would be a feat that I don't think anybody's ever been able to do, but we are. So what we've done with stage two so far is we're scrubbing the drawings. The drawings were complete in 2008. CD drawings were done. And when we cut the building in half, of course, we had to stop the team and design that. But at this point, we had to clean the drawings because the codes changed and a lot of other issues there. So the capital campaign, we want to complete the MCA because the cost keeps going up. And the drive is to really get as close as we can in the background in the first quarter of 2015. And then we open that rest of the building in 2018. This is a $163 million phase of the project. Our regional impact is pretty key here. We've got from the area, especially in the city of Winter Park, a great deal of subscribers from both the Ballet, the Philharmonic, and the Broadway series actually participates very, very closely in the project. But the good news is that out of all that support, $32 million is all that we have left to raise. And so that's how close we are in achieving the capital goal. Our budget is $514 million now, which is a reasonable per square foot cost, but we did have the impact of the delay, which was pretty significant, 2 year delay on one part of the project. Accessibility is important. I think this you saw we should always start with almost because people always say, how many park, how many park, how many get there? There are 4,000 parking spots just within 10 minutes, and on one of the, we're gearing everybody towards one garage right now just to make it really easy. And that garage can accommodate, if everyone drove their own vehicle, pretty much they have a parking spot. And that garage is a city commons garage. But also around there, there's probably, like I mentioned, about 4,000 other vehicles that were there. Programming is really important. Again, this center actually is the one that actually brings the programming to that center. We have a partnership with Ballet Across America. They bring the series in. But we also have partnerships with the Ballet, with the Harmonic. All the programming that you see up there is something that we have a chance to bring in. So at the end of May, we'll be announcing other content that we're bringing, anything from maybe a series of music, all the way down to maybe some international dance and perhaps even some lecture series. One other great thing about the Arts Center is we have a beautiful plaza on the outside, which you'll see in just a minute, and that plaza can accommodate up to 3,000 people for free performances, and we have our first sponsor for outdoor performances, Floor Blue, six different concerts, and the first concert is a international Latin band that actually is Grammy Award winning, which we'll announce that too. But the goal is to have 20 events in the plaza. We feel the outside of the Arts Center is just as important as the inside. Arts education is huge. Our director of arts education here today, David Brazil. And the building here is 10,000 square feet that we're starting with, and that back piece of property also has a place. There's three different types of programming that we're focusing on: community engagement, how many people involved. Our goal is from 2 to 100. Everybody has a chance to learn, whether it's tap dancing or if it happens to be ballroom dancing. They're learning about the arts, all the way down to the little guys. Our educational programs are both in the school and we go out. A great example is the Boys and Girls Club. We have a collaborative partnership. We're trying to fund that program. And that will impact six different Boys and Girls Club in five counties, 350 kids, and over 1,200 family members for 3 years. And then distance learning is really important. How do we take this content and give it to senior centers and how do we get into the school system? Working on that as well. We opened in 2014. And when we open, it'll be several days. It'll be probably 12 days. And we'll have, obviously, the first weekend's all access, all free for everyone to come and enjoy the plaza. And then we're also going to be doing a gala the following weekend, celebrating both the Philharmonic and the ballet as well. So I'd like to invite you inside the center. And I think you're going to hear it a bit, right? There you go. So two-thirds of the building on the right is what we're actually under construction now. It's 2,700 seats. There's a driver's ballet, actually, hall. The ballet will be here the first season. Actually, probably every season until the theater opens. This is going to have the Universal Central Florida for the festival, and they're going to be using it, as well as the kids, little guys, all the way up to our main seniors. This room also goes flat to platform, and we only have the audience booking up for the community space. This is the facility that we're building right now. The one I showed you short room was a proscenium theater for the ballet, also for concerts, and this is also a concert pattern, for which down the back comes in patches, which is an acoustical room, which is unamplified. I like the theater in the room, the camera room, and the big house. There's 30 yards. This is in the first phase. Visiting art teachers and artists and residents will be part of the program. And any type of consistent advisor comes or music series comes, we'll tie these artists into the region in terms of education programs. This is in the second phase. The person house supports the acoustical theory. Also, it has its own entrance really, so they have the chance to have a little bit of So, if I could, it's been an amazing view from my perspective just to see how many people have been so passionate about building community. There are thousands and thousands of hours that volunteers have given because they really care about where they live and the quality of life that we have here. And we've got a terrific infrastructure, and this, I think, is the missing piece. And it's not just the amenity that we have, it's the fact that collaboratively, seven counties, and we have donors all over that region that are supporting us. And philanthropy follows your leadership. And and your commitment. And we would love for you to consider participating with our project. We feel that this is the region's performing arts center, and we will welcome you for you to look at this, and it's an invitation for you to participate and come in and come in and be part of it.
Great. I'd love to go on another field trip, so maybe we can make it available for all of us in Government and the Sunshine. We can post it and go down there, Kathy, and get a nice hard hat there. It'd be great to see, even though it's not in the city of Winter Park. It's obviously built by Winter Parkers. So
it is. Thank
it will
you.
Serve Winter Parkers. So.
Mm.
When I was at a play a couple of weeks ago, if it wasn't no Winter Parkers there, I was surrounded by people from Winter Park. Place, so.
Yeah.
Questions of Kathy?
Kathy, what specifically... first of all, it's amazing what you guys have done, the facility itself and pulling together the different parties.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about being a great city, and I don't think you can be a great city without a great performing arts center. Living in New York, living in San Francisco, the arts are part of it. Whether or not I ever go to the ballet is absolutely not part of the equation at all. It's providing that service for everybody else that lives there that's into that. We as a city, I think, it will benefit the people that live in the city. And it will be a huge asset for us. What are you looking for from us? Specifically, how can we assist you in closing this gap and getting people more engaged? I think there may be some that think that's an Orlando thing. But I think the majority of people rise above that and realize the regional impact that this is going to have and the value of it from a regional perspective. How can we help you specifically?
Thank you. We know this is a regional project. And we were in Osceola County actually today, an invitation to go make a presentation to their council. They're considering participating with the gift to the Arts Center over a course of years. Central County will also make a presentation. We made a presentation. We're asked to go back in May. They're considering a gift from their region over several years. 10 years is what they're looking at. And next week, I think we have Casa Berry coming in to the Art Center to see it. Again, I feel like this is our Art Center, too. So thank you. It is the region's Art Center. We don't want it to be just a city building as Art Center because it isn't. And our philanthropy is actually driving that. What I'm asking of you is, there are so many of our partners that are always supporting this Art Center, but there's many more that we want to make sure that they know that they can belong to the Art Center, and we'll follow your leadership. And if you would consider a gift over a course of years that's not going to impact your operating budget to the point where it does not benefit, we would really love you to consider a gift over 10 years.
And Randy, I guess the question is for you next, following on, is this just something we're going to take up in any kind of budget discussions, or?
We can certainly do that, yes.
Okay, and do we need anything special? We don't need a referendum on it, anything to?
Right. Yeah, it would be similar to the other organizational support that you do.
Okay,
thank you.
Commissioner Spinkle.
I've been peeking in the windows down there.
Is it late at night?
No,
late at
night.
Those red roads?
Kathy, would you look into the garden that you shared with me when I went to
Oh, yeah. There's a fantastic... we have a community room called the DeVos Family Room, and that room actually has several dozen events already planned. But on top of that room, there's a terrace. We're short on funding to finish that. That terrace is a great gift for the Art Center, because if we can finish it, we're million short on that. If we could finish that, that's actually going to earn the Art Center money, because it's going to be great placemaking. Is that what you're referring to?
That is
fantastic.
It just looks like it should have Winter Park's name on it somewhere.
Yes.
Maybe not for the whole million, but I would suggest if you haven't been down there that you go and see it, because it's one of those things that would be great to be able to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Open invitation.
Yes.
Thank you.
So Randy, I don't know. There sounds interest at least to go to the next step and understand what that might look like, what other people may be doing. So.
Okay.
Maybe you can arrange that with Kathy to bring something back at the appropriate time. Is that what you're suggesting, Commissioner Lurie?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. There's four nods for this.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you very much. And for those who are leading, especially Jim, I know this wouldn't be possible without your help. So thank you so much for what you and Alexis have done. And Former Commissioner Ammonman from the City of Orlando is with us here today and others, so thank you all so very much. This is really, truly our region's art center, not a specific city's.
Thank you, Mayor.
That's great.
Thank you very much. That concludes my report, but if I may use the chairman's prerogative, would you like to remote with the commission? I know we can't be here at 5 o'clock, and I would give you the 3 minutes if you would do that. So fellow Orange County Commissioner and our own resident Winter Park, Bill Siegel, is here, and unfortunately can't be here at 5 o'clock hour. So in deference to a former commissioner, I thought I'd give him the 3 minutes at this point, and we listen to him. And you took Scott Randolph, so he only has 12 when he comes back to us.
Kind of you, Mayor. Thank you. Yeah, as a taxpayer in Winter Park, get my vote for the Arts Center. Thank you. I've actually been wanting to do this for a number of years, wanted only to come here as a citizen. When I was a county commissioner, I used to tell people the toughest job in the area, working on city commissions like y'all are very close to the people. Things get awful personal sometimes. Friends get pitted against friends, so thank you all for your service. It's a very difficult job. In any area, people always say, this is a pivotal time for the community. Well, this really is a pivotal time, the last couple of years and the next couple of years. And I want to thank you all for the things you've done for the community, big and small, as small as a little brick applique that I talked to Randy about up at the intersections. How accessible you are, how accessible your staff is, nice to work with. We had a rash of burglaries here a few months back. The police made everyone aware. The president was aware. It worked. I want to thank you for the way you handled your job on fast foods on our beloved Park Avenue. Very delicate balancing act. Then there's Commissioner Leary, who came to me a few years ago and wanted to fix West Fairbanks. I told him, too many jurisdictions. It's a Rubik's Cube. It'll never work, but you guys did it, and the place looks great. I know you have a lot of challenges coming ahead. There's a lot of growth pressures on Winter Park. Progress will come with some costs. You'll see lots of surveys and studies, et cetera, and I know you all are going to use your best judgment for all of these big projects that are headed your way. And I just really wanted to thank you for doing a great job for all of us that are privileged enough and lucky enough to live here. So on behalf of me and my family, Godspeed. Good luck with all of your challenges. Thank you,
Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. Commissioner, that concludes my kind of report, even though I don't know that I need to report. Lots to show, not much to tell for me, but a lot of other people did, and certainly moving. Commissioner, I'm going to move to item 5-0, your report.
It's very good. A couple items here. One, you may have either heard the loud, high-pitched noise coming from the train station or been told about it from others that have suffered through it over the last few days. As I understand, and I don't know if Don's verified it, but DOT was out there working on it today, and they think they have it under control. And so
I heard it Saturday night.
Yes, Saturday night you could hear it.
But it was only when the train came by. I don't know.
Right, but then, and it was very high-pitched.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're on the platform, it was really, really bad. You hear it on Park Avenue. And apparently Friday night it went on for like 30 minutes at a time. So many of the restaurant patrons were complaining, and so we heard from a lot of people over the weekend and today. But
they're working on.
I think they got it fixed today. Of course, Don's shaking his head yes. So if anybody asked you about it, it was a malfunctioning piece of equipment that they've now tuned.
Only dogs can hear.
Yeah.
Is there some subliminal message in it too?
The message is don't walk across the track if you hear that noise.
Okay.
Most of it is a train's coming.
Okay.
You mentioned the tree planting earlier. You may remember at the last meeting someone stood up and asked when we were going to replant the tree in the West Meadow. That's part of this Trees for Peace event that was scheduled for last Tuesday. It's now tentatively rescheduled for May 1st. So it'll be that and some other trees around the post office there will be happening, we think, on May 1st. They're trying to finalize those plans. On your agenda, I
the library has requested a work session for June 9th to talk about the future of the library building. So I wanted to see if that was okay with the commission's schedule to do it at like 2 o'clock or so, right before the commission meeting on the 9th of June.
Is there something to present? Or is,
They will have something to present, and they want to have a conversation with the commission about some options and
see if the direction.
That works for me.
Well, they want to deny our city's assets to speak to us, so.
Fine for me.
All right. My only issue would be if we are going to be talking about how we expand or become new or whatever, then we talk about the financing potential, but that would be going to reduce the manager, so maybe that's hopefully part of the presentation.
Is there any homework required before the 9th, or are we going to have some information before then, or is this a walk-in and...
Sean,
please go. Here we go, yes. Formal presentation.
Identify yourself, please. For those listening at home.
The public library is actually the last people on earth trying to protect your privacy. You'll never find out what you check out from the library. It's true, we really are. I'm Sean Schaefer. I'm the executive director of the Winter Park Public Library. I've been here not quite a year, and I haven't, because I've had a really long list of things to do. There are I started with 98 post-it notes on my wall of things that the staff wanted to accomplish, and I think I'm only down to, I might still have 70 on my wall that we're looking at. Yes, you'll have some information beforehand. I'd like to maybe meet with each of you beforehand too, just to, again, kind of get to know you, because I haven't had an opportunity to formally meet any of you yet. If we have documents beforehand, we'll give it to you. I also teach at the community college still in Illinois. People don't want homework. Do you actually want homework?
Small amounts.
With lots of pictures?
Lots of pictures.
Yeah. We can do that all the way.
This came from Edav,
though.
We've got to
get
a
staff of Bridge to Sean.
I'm going to have a leather PowerPoint just like that one.
Well, staff of Bridge Town will make it a successful day. And
yeah, I find it
was
hardly
surprising. This is probably not going
to be No. We do not plan to surprise you, and I'll work with staff on financing before June as well.
Thank you.
I know that this requires an action, but I have been the ex officio member of the board, and I know their charter allows other representatives, and I'm not able to get to every meeting, so if it's possible, I would like to, and Sarah, I think you're close to education and others, if you'd be willing, and I don't know if your charter permits us to have two ex officio members or not. I can appoint somebody. I would enjoy serving in that capacity, but would enjoy, Commissioner Temple enjoys that too.
I would appreciate it.
So, her schedule probably lets her get to meetings maybe a little bit more quickly than I have been. I have a hospital conflict with the very...
I think you just said you don't do anything.
No, I didn't say that. I have a hospital conflict at the very same time once a month, so it would be willing to do that.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if that requires a formal action of our board or not, but we'll just make it so. Thank you. Mr. City Manager Knight, anything else?
We're working on the, there's been a lot of talk about the Lee Road extension and all that. We're working on trying to get scheduled all the public meeting you talked about and all those types of things. So we're working on trying to get all that out and done. So we'll be getting you some information.
I hope that's productive. I've recently seen some things in the community where there's just a group of people that want to turn this into a gripe session, I think. And I don't know if that's the best purpose of staff or others' time, so I hope that we can turn this into something that's very productive and have a good end product from... Nothing bad happens when we listen to our citizens, but...
Right. The plan is to have it, have a forum type where have the boards around the room. We'll do some specific presentations at like 5 o'clock and then do the same presentation at 6 o'clock, but then, be a short presentation, and then in between the presentations, people will walk around and ask questions of people with the different pictures and be able to leave written comments to the city commission. So that's kind of the thing I'm talking about.
I was just going to say, my intent in supporting Commissioner McMackin's talks last commission meeting on this were to get ahead of the gripes.
Right.
For the most part,
I mean, I think it happens specifically when we're out campaigning, when you get to knock on people's doors and you speak to them and somebody says, yeah, I heard you were against this. I mean, this is a nice opportunity to go out and say, no, this actually what you're hearing when people are knocking on your doors might not be the right thing. So let's tell you exactly what's going on.
Right.
I think it's a great opportunity for us to do that, to try to get ahead of some of this.
Yep.
I just wanted to clarify the time frame of all of that, because I know a written notice has gone out to the public. Mm-hmm. So would you just tell me what the time frame is and when it's going to be here?
And the written notice was specifically around the development, correct?
Around the development.
Yeah, I think these are two different subjects, as I understand them.
Well, they are related. They are different subjects. Do you remember all the dates?
I do. April 29th, the evening of April 29th, is the day that we are putting together the forum to talk about the Leave Road extension. The primary people who will be presenting that information will be the UP Development, because they've done the traffic analysis about the Leave Road extension. So right now, Clarissa, just let me know that will be at the Civic Center starting at 5 o'clock. 5 to 7:30 is the time frame on that. We had talked about having a workshop with you after that meeting on asking you from...
Yeah, we looked at potentially May 5th as a possible date for that. That's an off Monday from your normal commission meetings.
But I'm confused because... I know it because I got the citywide notice,
right,
too.
The citywide notice is for the UP
development.
Correct.
Right.
I will tell you that notice also included an alignment for the Leave Road extension. So they're both trailing together parallel. The Leave Road, it was staff's understanding that you wanted to have the discussion about the Leave Road extension prior to having a discussion about the UP development.
Yep.
That's why we're
talking
about this.
That's from previous meetings, yes.
I didn't recall that was specifically combined.
I don't recall it, but I don't know how we can look at the development prior to looking at the extension. I think we just, from a practical standpoint.
The commission wanted to look at the extension before the development came for formal approval.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
That's what Steve said.
And that's the path we're headed on. We certainly want to get this out of the way before they go to P&Z. So we wanted to have the public workshop before the P&Z to talk about the development, and then we would like that opportunity to have a workshop to talk about Leave Road extension to you all prior to P&Z, but it doesn't have to be. It can be before it comes to you.
Well, it comes in June 9th, so it seems like there's an opportunity. I don't know if other matters may be coming before the commission, if there's any other need for workshops off time. So
we were trying to squeeze it in there, so if you don't mind it going to P&Z before you have your work session, then
when does it go to P&Z?
May 6th is your public notice. That was the notice you received.
But I thought you said you were thinking of May 5th for us. I would like to have that before it goes. If May 5th is the date.
That works for staff. If it works for the city commission, works for me.
I just want to get it scheduled.
I'm fine with the 5th.
And it would be a work session. That would not be a public input session. That would just be for the...
I'm fine with that. I think it's a public
city commission.
Unless for P&Z.
Okay, so I'm just going to clarify to make sure I got this, okay? On May 5th, we would be having a work session about the Leave Road extension here.
Right.
It's just a workshop, so it would be like what we just had earlier today.
Right, correct. Okay?
And then whatever happens through the process with P&Z continues to happen. But you are also having something on the 29th for the public.
April 29th. Right.
And you're going to discuss both issues there.
That'll be the Leave Road extension primarily. The fact that the development is happening, a lot of the traffic numbers are surrounded, the development, obviously.
It is a Leave Road extension discussion, and it will take in, if the development is approved, how that will impact the Leave Road extension. Is that fair?
Yes. But I want to be clear, if we approve or disapprove the development on June, whenever it comes to us, the Leave Road extension is not going to happen.
No.
It doesn't go all the way and get built.
Right.
This isn't even in funding until 2018 or
that's
beyond.
Correct. No, that's correct.
So, I'm intrigued by the combination of the two, but I guess the question is would we I'm concerned about holding a development up to something that may or may not have a road that may or may not get approved 5 years from now.
Well, if the developer wants access at the light at Lee Road, in order to get that, DOT has told them they need the Lee Road extension. So if the commission's not going to approve the Lee Road extension or going to be opposed to the Lee Road extension, the developer may not get access to that light and will have to redesign his project to get access from another spot along 1792. So it is an integral part of...
If there isn't anything that comes to us between now and June 9th that says we're approving an extension or not approving an extension, and then on the 9th technically we're approving his development rights, whether that happens is DOT's responsibility, am I correct?
Yes and no, but I mean the DOT is looking for input from the City Commission as to whether or not you're in favor of that Lee Road extension. So while they would certainly like to see it happen because of all the benefits that are obtained on traffic flow along the 1792 corridor, if the City Commission comes out against it, then they're likely not going to give the developer access at the Lee Road light. So it is up to them, and they could force it on us. They have told us they would like to see a resolution from the city either for or against the project.
What I'm hearing is they don't stand alone. That's what I'm hearing here, and that's been my biggest concern.
But that's not, we don't control that.
I understand that.
I think they do stand alone, though, Commissioner, because it just so happens the timing of this has been brought up this way. But we could be faced with this decision in 2018 whether or not Public Square got bought and knocked down.
They stand alone, but the Lee Road extension can be moved out, it can be expedited to coincide with the development. So that's where, I mean, but they do stand alone. And FDOT is looking for support from us. They just simply want the city to say they would certainly like the local approval or local support. If it makes sense, if this commission says, you know, we think it makes sense, they would love to have that. If we go completely against it, they can still, it is their right, it is their, they can certainly go ahead and do it.
So how do we do that? I mean, that's what I'm trying to understand, the vehicle by which we, quote, support it.
By resolution.
Which was done in 2003 or 2006.
That's correct.
So we will be ratifying the resolution that the commission has already made?
Yes, sir.
Do we need to bring that back every year?
No, sir. Well, I don't know.
I mean,
it depends on when the project...
You know, every year somebody may not like this, so they have to bring it back again? I don't know.
They asked for it. This time when we were up there, they asked specifically for this. They wanted us to tell them, do you want this or not? And then, I mean, that they're asking us for that. So I think we can't ignore that.
I think, again, as we have dealt with FDOT, and they have been extremely good partners through a number of projects prior to this date and ongoing through this date, they're just looking for simple support from this commission. And it could be, Mr. Mayor, a ratification of the previous resolution. But it's also, I think, an opportunity for us to get out to the community to, again, share with the community the positives. There are some very real concerns about it, and then there's concerns that are being completely inflated as to what this is going to do to surrounding communities. So I think it's an opportunity for us to get out there, talk to the community, find out where they stand on things, explain some of the details of it, and come back and issue either a resolution of support or not support to the FDOT.
I think it has a major impact on the potential for the Whole Foods site. Because if they don't have access to that light, that could potentially change their entire site plan and their desire whether or not to be there. I mean, I still see them as linked, even though they may be separate projects. I think if they're going forward, they need to know if they have that Lee Road's in the picture, because they need to access that at the light. And that does not happen without a Lee Road extension. That was my understanding of our discussions. I say our discussions when we were up in Tallahassee and DOT was asking for that letter of approval.
And the traffic analysis that we've been waiting on and haven't seen yet is something that's going to go to the public on the 29th and to us on May the 5th.
Right. Okay. It'll come to you in written form, hopefully before the 29th.
Okay.
But you were talking to her whenever you have your work session.
Well, I guess I don't need an analysis to know that there's a mess and the intersection's a mess, so I trust the analysis will say that. Let's go drive it tonight, and I think we need to figure out that there isn't something that needs to be done there. I know the concern is will it come to my neighborhood, and that's something that we need to, you know, folks, with or without a railroad extension, people are using Winter Park as a cut-through. So we need to be willing to address that with or without a railroad extension.
Right.
And they're not just using Palmer as a cut-through. They're using Temple, they're using Fairbanks and Glenbridge and Lakemont. And so, I mean, at some point we need to say, is this, I mean, the issue's cut through. I don't know that anybody's standing up and going, Ludo's wonderful the way it is, and let's not change the avenue.
We're not talking about putting an additional destination on the east side of town that's all of a sudden going to draw 3,000 more cars a day through the city of Winter Park. We're not. And again, people say, well, we're going to increase traffic through Winter Park. I'm not sure what we've created on the east side of Winter Park to all of a sudden draw tons of more traffic through Winter Park. We're just directing, or FDOT is proposing redirecting to assist at a troubled intersection. And again, this is their project. Whether or not we like it or not, they can certainly go forward with it. But if a developer, if a private developer is going to help fund that for them, I'm sure that they'd certainly like our support to move it up from 2018 to coincide with the development.
Okay, we have a schedule, I guess, to listen to these things.
Sure.
That concludes my report, Mr. Mayor.
Questions with the city manager?
I just wanted to mention that I've had a number of calls, three in one day, on fences. And so I just want to know what our rules are about chain link fences, because I even got pictures. So I'm sure that maybe it's just an anomaly, but I did get three in one day on chain link fences. So now I start noticing things like chain link fences. And so when you get a chance, bring that back to us, because there's some interest out there.
Yes.
Can I just go back?
I don't know. I mean,
the issue is chain link fences in the front yard that Commissioner Sprinkle called me about. And
I'm assuming we have.
Randy, did we set a time on the May 5th for the road extension discussion with the commission?
We did not.
It's 4 o'clock. Work?
4 works.
Works for me.
I'm good there.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm good with that as well.
Thank
it's
you.
A work session, so
yes,
that won't be open for public comment. Any other questions, City Manager?
No, sir.
Mr. Eisenman, any questions from you or comments from you?
Well, just one comment. First of all, Mr. Brown is celebrating a religious holiday today, so I was lucky enough to be here to join you.
Thank you for serving us.
And I did get in a little bit early and heard that you had a concern or a question that was raised. I heard the dreaded attorney's name come up one time during the workshop. So if that is still the desire of this commission, it had to do with
that was a specific
yeah, city manager was
comment that I think the city manager will refer to you.
Okay.
I just want to
such
a question in terms of ownership of property.
I don't know if you need to ask him beyond that point or not.
Yeah. You can't comment on it now because you don't know what it is.
No, sir, do not.
But I think the city manager will give you that information. It's a question.
Follow up on it.
What happens to land if HCLST goes away, if that ever happened? What would happen to land that was given to them?
So there you go. I just heard that and wanted to comment on it. That was it as far as a comment.
Great. Questions to the city attorney?
No, sir.
Hearing none. Mr. Harlow.
This is the week of big reports.
This is the most exciting day of the year for the city.
It's a special occasion. I should have worn a coat too. But we have our finance staff is here with us today. We have our assistant finance director, Karen Cockerham, chief accountant, Franco Catalan, and chief accountant, Rick Roman, here with us. and Dan O'Keefe with Moore Stevens Lovelace, shareholder with the firm. I think the audit went very well this year, and the results are good. Our general fund balance reserves is about 27.5% of expenses. We're happy about that. One of the most significant, or the most significant reason for that is we received final payment from our FEMA claims from 2004 storms. And I'd like to thank Cecilia Meeks for her patient work with FEMA officials on the project worksheets and finding every eligible line possible, and every department of the city helped with that effort as well. But I think the patience paid off, and I think we came out very well with our reimbursement. I would also like to thank Dan and his firm for their flexibility in working with us on the scheduling of the audit. We encountered some difficulties this year with various issues with our staff having to be out for extended periods of time for various reasons that really put us in a bind, but Dan and his folks worked with us, and I think the audit went very well. I know it's not easy to reschedule these kind of things from an audit perspective. They got other client needs to meet too. But Dan has a presentation. He's going to kind of go over the highlights for you.
Thank you, and good evening. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, everything seems to be right in the world again. I've got a brief presentation for you. Just want to kind of go over a few things. Wes, I'm sorry, was talking about preparation of the financial statements, and this is really the responsibility of the staff. Our responsibility is actually to audit the financial statements and render some type of report on them. The report that we've rendered is what's called an unmodified opinion, which is the best opinion you can receive. It basically says your financial statements are fairly presented and you can rely on them. There's several other reports that we have to issue as well. One is a report on internal controls in compliance as it relates to the financial statements. So this is the series of tests that we have to do on your internal controls in compliance, which are the laws and regulations that are adopted, you know, by this commission. And we apply certain procedures to render an opinion there as well. And we had no significant deficiencies we found, or no material weaknesses, or no significant events of noncompliance. Another report we have to issue is related to major federal programs, and then there's one that's related to your management letter. Management letter is kind of an all-encompassing thing. You may have comments in it, but there's certain things the rules of the Auditor General makes us actually refer to and do test work on, and that also shows you that test work results. And one of the things that Florida statutes does, which is really kind of interesting, is that we have to go through and perform a financial condition assessment on you. You know, it's one of those statutory provisions in there to identify communities that they're having fiscal problems so that they can resolve those problems before they turn into a Detroit. And in, of course, your case, I've got a long history with this city, and I know that, you know, you went over that bump, you know, with the recession, but analyzing your last three years worth of financial information, very good. I mean, you've really kind of come back very strong. They have a 27%, you know, reserve in your general fund balance is really excellent, you know, so I think hopefully the worst is behind us. There are certain responsibilities we have, which is following a boatload of audit standards, and which we accomplish. There's management's responsible for a variety of different things in providing us the information that we need to audit. And of course, we don't render an opinion in internal controls, but we factor those into the whole audit process. Compliance, of course, is important on different levels. You know, I mentioned your local level and the laws and rules that you adopt here, but also there could be federal and state, you know, compliance requirements that apply to you as well that we also consider. There were no unreported or unadjusted differences. We had no disagreements with management, and as far as we know, management didn't receive any opinions from outside firms. We use what's called a risk-based approach, so certainly there's items that are always going to be of a higher risk. For example, your debt, you know, we go in and perform compliance testing related to your long-term debt, make certain that your coverage are hitting properly. We look at investments to make certain that your investment policies are being adhered to, and in any other areas we can deem to be appropriate throughout the audit. Management at the end of the engagement provides us with a bunch of representations that we ask for, and it's just to make certain that they have provided us with all the information that we requested, and that's their acknowledgement to that. We assign certain individuals that are government specialists. I head up the firm governmental practice group. All of my team members, you know, do just governments, and we also use IT specialists as we plug into our team as well. This was the audit schedule that we had agreed to and pretty much stayed with throughout this process. And then just a few financial highlights, if you will. It's more here not to kind of repeat what Wes had said or to kind of reiterate what senior the management discussion and analysis, but what it just shows you right off the bat is that, you know, you're really fiscally sound. I mean, you've got a, you know, good current ratio. Most businesses would love to have this type of a current ratio. Your fund balance reserves are good. You had a positive change in that position. I mean, these financial statements just look really good. I mean, if you remember back when you had to make some hard decisions related to the rates and the electric system was actually not meeting its coverages, all that has resolved itself, you know, and now not only are you meeting the coverage requirements, now you're building up the reserves you need in the electric system, too, to hopefully, you know, make whatever improvements you need down the line. There's different fund financial statements that you'll see within here. One thing that we have to do is we have to call out what's called major funds. Your community redevelopment district is not really a major fund from a quantitative standpoint, but it's major because the state requires us to actually render an opinion on the CRA. So we actually have to go in and audit those costs within that fund. And you have two enterprise funds, which are both considered major, which we opined on. And then, of course, your pension trust funds, we have to opine on based on state requirements as well. This is your general fund. Your general fund, as you can see, between 2013 and 2012, had a nice improvement. Of course, Wes told you the reason, primary reason for that. But again, it's in really healthy shape. And from a budgetary standpoint, you're right on track with your budget. Revenues were strong, and appropriations were, spending kept within appropriations. The proprietary funds, as I mentioned before, your operations are strong there. Your operating income is coming in a positive, which is certainly where you want to be, and certainly you're building up some nice reserves. Every year we get new accounting pronouncements. Next year we're going to have some that are going to start floating in here. The big one is pensions. That's going to be a significant change. When you look in your financial statements, you'll see unfunded liabilities for your police and fire pension, of close to $30 million, which that liability is going to actually show up on the face of your financial statements based on these new standards. And that's going to really be more consistent with the commercial model that's been out there for a number of years. So it's going to be a radical change to the financial statements. Now, personally, the information's already in here, and if you really want to find it, it's there. It's not like it's not disclosed. The only change that's going to happen is the governmental activities at the top level statements. Your fund financial statements will remain the same. There won't be any differential there. And with that, I'd be happy to open it up with any questions that you may have. Now, I think there was one thing I do want to mention. We did have one prior period adjustment related to your internal service fund for insurance. I just want to explain that real quickly. The rationale is there is that there's a liability in that internal service fund for other post-employment benefits, which is a required calculation by the GASB that's driven by Florida statutes. It says that employees that leave the city or retire can actually remain in your health care plan. So because you have potentially an older population in your health care plan, it actually drives up the rates. And that implicit rate differential is a calculation that has to be done, and it's done on an actuarial basis. So that amount is in your financial statements, but there was a liability that had been recorded in the internal service fund, but there was no charges to recoup that cost. So my recommendation to staff was to pull that out because it was making your fund financial statements look worse than they really were. And it really wasn't appropriate to put that liability in that particular fund. So that was pulled out, appropriate adjustment was made, so the fund represents the charges that are being made back to other departments. The whole purpose of the internal service fund is to allocate costs. So if you're not going to allocate certain costs, then you should put those costs in the fund to begin with. So that was the purpose of the appropriate adjustment. And I think it helps with your financial statements because you don't want any confusion by rating agencies when they're analyzing your financial statements and seeing something in there that doesn't make sense. And with that, Mr. Mayor, I'll open up for you.
Questions of Mr. O'Keefe?
Can I make a comment?
By all means.
Just the first time I've been able to read it, understand it, and not have any questions. Thank you.
I want to commend city staff in totality, not just Wes and Randy. But we've been good stewards of the funds that have been given to us. Interesting things. It's available on the website. Am I correct, Clarissa? The report is or will be? It will be. Interesting things in that actually the amount of property taxes we receive are actually about, I think, almost $3 million less than 5 years ago. So, and you realize I don't think there's been anything but an increase in city services. So we're figuring out smart ways to be able to provide the care of the city, and I commend the staff for that. There were only two, and these are not questions, these are more comments to the city manager. There were two things that I learned as I went through this financial statement. The one is this post-employment benefit liability in light of Affordable Care Act and other things. I think that as we get to our budget season, we probably need to look at if there's ways to mitigate that with benefit plan change potentially, and there might be. And I know that Andy's going to look at that. The other thing that is just it has nothing to do with the audit. It has nothing to do with the finances. You know, I don't know that we've ever sat with our enterprise fund, specifically the water utility and electrical utility, and said, what do they want? What do we want them to be financially? We've said we want to have good water and we want underground, but I don't know that we've ever said what do we want the actual businesses to be financially. You know, we've set a 30% goal for the city. We've done a lot of things in terms of where we want debt to be, et cetera. I don't know that we've done that with the actual water utility, which is 40 years old. How old is our water utility?
It goes back to the 60s, the inside the city limits sewer, and then we bought the other one in 1981.
Right. So you know, it's time to look at that, I think, and then probably also time to look at the electric utility, which is, I would argue, now out of its infancy, now almost 10 years old with us, and probably ready to go financially to the next level. And I think there's some specific decisions that over time we may need to make with that. So that's just come from, really Dan's commentary and being able to look at saying that the city has done really good work in getting those businesses, if I can call them that, going in the right direction. So if there are any questions, I'm going to take a ministerial action and ask, and I'll move that ministerially that we accept the financial report. It's technically not something that we have to move, but I'd like to just have in the minutes that we've accepted the report. So I move that. Is there a second?
Second.
Great. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Dan, thank you. Good to have a Winter Park firm helping Winter Park. Thank you so much. And thank you for being a Winter Park firm. We'll hope you do more business in our city, not with other people. Thank you. It's actually 5 o'clock. It's never happened that we were exactly at 5 o'clock when we came to Citizen Commons.
Call for a minute?
No, I'm going to go for it here. matters. So any citizens wishing to speak to us about matters that are not coming before us on our agenda are willing to speak to us. And then I'll kind of get to the consent agenda and take a brief break, probably.
Hi, Pete Brogan, I was going to have one subject to talk on, but after listening today, I think I have several subjects. One, I want to echo Bill Sula's comments that he voluntarily came and spent his time to come down here and compliment the city staff and the commission. I'd like to add to that a general comment that I have been privileged to serve on a number of city boards over the past several years, and I just want to affirm my joy at serving with such professional and very competent people, both in terms of our commission and the members of the boards that I've served with. Number two is I'm a supporter of the Art Center, and I was pleased to see them come here today, and I would encourage each of you to go down there and see it. Originally, I was somewhat skeptical, and I've become a complete believer. This is a dramatic change in Central Florida. It's a marvelous facility, and I think we all need to think about how we can support it in various ways. It may not just be monetarily. Third comment is I was very thrilled with the financial report, with one exception. The exception deals with a comment Les just made that sets an example that I think worthy of mention. As you may know, I have a piece of property in New Jersey that was impacted by Sandy. And the local government there is broke, and they had to borrow $25 million in order to accommodate what was necessary as a result of that tragedy. Because the city of Winter Park had reserves in 2004, our task as taxpayers was to wait for FEMA. Up there, I've got to subsidize that debt for the next 10 years, I find out, which is not very good. The other comment I want to make pertains to housing. I've been doing some personal research on housing in Winter Park in relation to some of the decisions that have to be made by P&Z coming up, and I became obsessive and listened to the work session earlier before I came down here, and I wanted to just make a couple comments about it. One of the issues that strikes me is that we have 20 years of experience in subsidized housing of various forms in Winter Park. And I would just suggest that we ask the question about how has our experience been? And what has it demonstrated? Have we created viable single-family residential housing projects? Are they viable? How long have the people been there? Do they hold on to it, et cetera, et cetera? May I interrupt you for one more comment?
Thank you.
So that was the one thought process. The original reason I came down here was to repeat something I said to you several months ago and ask that as you address the upcoming budget discussions for the next several months, that you again seriously consider establishing a precedent that simply takes a certain portion, small portion initially, but sets the precedent that we invest any savings that come as a result of the undergrounding of our electric system in the financing of our long-term street tree program. Again, I think we want to set a precedent early in this because of the pressures that will eventually arise as the savings become realized. And I think if we set that precedent early, it will do a good long-term service to the city. Thanks.
Great. Other citizens wishing to speak to us? Going once, twice. I'll close the public comments. Thank you. Let's pick up the consent agenda, and I'd like about a 10-minute break, if that's possible, after that.
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval of the consent agenda.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Great. Commission discussion? Open the floor for public comment if there's any citizens wishing to speak to us about anything on the consent agenda. Seeing none, I close the floor for public comment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Can we take 10?
Yes.
Is that all right? Thank you.
Perfect.
Diana, we're picking back up at item 10A, the appointment of the vice mayor. For purposes of discussion, I'm going to move to appoint Commissioner Steve Wade. Is there a second?
A second.
Thank you. Discussion. No commission discussion. I'm going to open the floor for public comment from the citizens who wish to speak to us about this matter. Seeing none, I close the floor for public comment. Ask the clerk to read the roll.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
No.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Relocation of Concours de Elegance to the golf course. Mr. Holland.
If I may, once a little over here.
I wish you would, sir. I know it's the 100th anniversary of the golf course this year, is that correct?
Yes.
I know we're starting to get some plans to celebrate.
We have got a committee in place that's putting together a wonderful celebration.
My goal will be to break 100 on the 100th. My goal on the golf course.
Just play for the hole.
Skip the last cut. I can break 100 if I do that.
Play
with
somebody
who
works for you.
You know, for 12 wonderful years, we have enjoyed the Concours d'Elegance in Central Park and Park Avenue. And it's been a great experience. It's been a growing experience for the group that puts it together and hosts it and has it. And it's been very well received from the citizens and the participants. We have been approached by the group to move the event to the Country Club. This is not unusual because most of the most prominent events, auto events in the United States are held on the most prestigious golf courses around. So it's not something unusual. So we approached the Parks Board with it. They liked the idea, the staff. I've got my superintendent here, Mr. Ed Batchelor, and Lee Pafard, our manager, that is in favor of it. They don't have any concerns about having this event move to the golf course. They're going to use it for 5 days, which will take the setup and the breakdown, plus the event. And they're proposing to pay us an amount of $30,000 estimated for that amount. The reason they need to move in order to take their event up a notch is they have to have a controlled gate. They have to charge admission to get the big cars, to get the nice events, and make it like the other events are around. So the proposal is to fence off a gated area on the golf course on holes 1, 2, 8, and 9 and provide that for the area for the event. Now, Tim Weber is here. He is prepared to do a short presentation on the event. If you would like, we'll ask him to come forward and do that.
Mr. Weber? John, you said the Parks Board did see this, and it was...
Yes.
Their vote is in
favor. They were in favor of it.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. It's really hard to believe that Winter Park Concourse has been here 12 years. This will be our 13th year. Started in 2002, our founders in the far back, Bob Tallgren, and it's been a real labor of love. When I took it over 7 years ago, the first person asked me, so are you a car guy or an events guy? If people don't know, my real line of business is I put on events. I become a car guy, and we work tirelessly all year long trying to procure the right cars to come to Winter Park. We made a real large change a year ago. Because when I took it over not knowing, you know, I said I wanted to be like Pebble Beach because Pebble Beach is the number one show, classic car show. And I should mention that that's what we are, a classic car show. Concours, which is arts of cars. And we're Winter Park. We're not going to be Pebble Beach. We're not going to be Amelia Island. Very proud of our town. With the Parks Board, we have built up a relationship where when I first took it over, we had no cars in the park. And over the years, we've gradually inched it up and have become a good steward of the park because it is so beautiful. So I went to John back in January, and I presented my ideas to, if you don't know about the show, it now currently goes from Canton all the way down here to Comstock, and we've integrated the North Park and the South Park. Let's see if I can work this a little bit.
That'll help you, I think.
What my proposal, I'm not doing very good here, but we'll...
Just ask him to advance it. He can advance it.
Can you advance it, Josh?
Thank you, sir.
Again, that's a picture of the crowds we get. So I approached John about the golf course because the whole key to car shows are, just like our beautiful art show, is the artists, but it's the cars. So by moving it, could you advance it? By moving it to the golf course, that will really allow us to bring in a lot of these car collectors. I met with the mayor, and he had a very pointed question. He said, so what do people think about the Winter Park Concourse? And I mentioned to him that we are known as the best street show. And that is a really good title, but that also creates problems because a lot of these people with these $1 million, $2 million, $4 million cars don't want to be on the street. They're worried, they're concerned about their cars getting scratched, which they should be. So as we progressed...
Okay, that was a $10,000 car, and I'm worried about that.
Yeah.
I understand that. Okay.
Maybe it's so as we progressed in meetings with different meetings through the city to see if that we weren't creating problems, I came up with a proposal to kind of flip-flop the show. Flip-flop it means, next picture please, one more, one more, that's Pebble Beach, one more, Pebble Beach, keep going, one more, that's Amelia Island, one more, Amelia Island. This is the Catalina at the Breakers on their golf course. Keep going. Okay. So my proposal would be to flip-flop the show. Start at Canton and go north up to Webster. From Canton to Whipple would be the new car dealers like we've always had. We might have some secondary cars there on display, on static display. And then at the golf course, next one, then at the golf course, we would fence the golf course in, as Mr. Holland said, hole number 1, 2, 8, and 9. It's 3,200 feet around, I've measured it. That would become the gated portion of the concourse, which this year would be Sunday, November 16th. We're looking at fees of $20 a ticket, or $2 for $30, as a way to start. And I've talked to, and Mr. Hahn had mentioned how much we would pay for the right to do this. I'm excited for the fact that it's, Winter Park is so beautiful, our cars are beautiful, and my real goal is to create this jewel in the fall that is Winter Park's Concourse d'Elegance. Any questions?
Questions of the prisoner?
I'd just like to move it.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you. Commissioner Mackin?
Couple quick ones. So we would be closing Park Avenue from Whipple up to Webster.
No, from Canton.
Well, I'm talking about we're going to
gated.
Be closed off.
Gated?
Is that what you mean? Yes.
That is correct.
So would Park be closed the full 5 days or just
on
Sunday?
I've had a great relationship with the police department over the years. Historically, what happens
is there's that part of the road from Tilton.
Could you go back to slide, please, Josh, and maybe that might help you, Commissioner.
From Tilton to Webster would shut down at 2 a.m. on that Sunday.
Okay.
They post notices so that people don't park on the avenue, and then it would open up again at 6 o'clock on Sunday night. So from 2 to 6.
Perfect. That's good for me. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions?
And the affected property owners to drive in and out, Tim?
There's a great question. I walked with Officer Durkee, you know, Mr. my buddy who's as tall as the sky. Randy and I walked it. There's one condominium north Park Avenue, just north of Swoop. They're in between Swoop and Casa Feliz. It's called Bel Air. What we've talked about, what the police department and the fire department we came up with, is to have a one lane out of their property down to Swoop. So it wouldn't impact them. All those other condominiums, and I never knew this, but all the other condominiums up there have back entrances, so they will not be impacted.
So, Tim, I'm sorry, to be clear, you'd have one lane from Webster to Swoop?
No, from Swoop,
yes,
to Bel Air, which is just,
I got you.
So which is just south of Casa Feliz.
Right.
Well, actually south of Whipple.
So then you come in the back off the Swoop and
get back. And we've done that when we've been on Park Avenue. We do that over on New England because of the parking garage from Center Street to Knowles. You have to have that one lane because you have to have access.
And have you, I know you and I chatted about this a little bit, have you been in touch with St. Margaret Mary?
I met Father Walsh and I saw Guy Collado. You know, Father Walsh has reservations because, you know, it's his church. The one thing that will happen is from Canton South all the way south will be wide open on that Sunday. And it's historically been closed for the last 12 years, so that gives that much more parking.
Other questions?
I'm just not looking forward to that call from Father Walsh. It's okay.
I'll have to deal with
it. Grace is a wonderful thing.
I'll remind him of that.
He gets help from the Spanish Inquisition.
No, sir, no more questions over here.
No. Any questions of staff? I'm assuming our fire department has reviewed this too, and the police, to assure that public safety would be preserved, and the neighbors in the community have been noticed or positively supported. There's really only, what, 6 or 7 homes along Webster and whatever homes are along Whipple. Okay, I'm going to open the floor for public comment. Any citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter are welcome to do so at this time. I don't see any citizens wishing to do that. Any further commission discussion? Clerk, will read the roll, please.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes, thank you. Good luck.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Look forward to a good event.
Yeah.
Item 11A, that doesn't require Mr. Reichman to read to us, does it?
I don't believe so.
No.
There's no.
Dory, are you presenting this, or Jeff, or?
Between John's hip, my foot, Jeff's back, you really need to tell Randy to be a little bit kinder to his tell him that. He's a taskmaster. It's just so tough. this is a follow-up to an approval given for the off-site parking lot and development agreement amendment to the Lakeside Project. This came in front of you at your last meeting. To have off-site parking for a Blue Cross Blue Shield medical building at the Lakeside Project. Mr. Woodall with Unicor is here tonight to answer any questions. The plan in front of you was a parking lot concept plan that he submitted with 21 spaces. It also has an amendment to the development agreement that you all approved at your last meeting to incorporate these particular requirements into it. Staff is recommending approval of this, and we feel that the plan is acceptable for the parking lot facing 1792. And Mr. Woodall is here to answer any questions.
I guess I'd ask for the will of the commission on this matter before we go forward.
I move for approval.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Questions of the commission?
No, I move for approval on this. I had asked for it to come back, and we agreed upon that merely to see that, yes, that it would be screening of the parking from Fairbanks, and I think this does from 1792, and this does an ample job of doing that. So I'm fine moving it forward.
I'm fine with that also, but this doesn't include anything with a lot that they're using right next to it also for parking, correct? This is just for the lot that they purchased for parking. It doesn't include anything for the place that Hillstone's using to park?
No, ma'am, just their property.
Okay, well, I knew that, but I knew that we also talked at our meeting that we were hoping for that they might be able to get together and do something, because that's going to, I drive by there and look at it and think, we still need to do something about that. I know it doesn't have anything to do with this, but there was a comment at the table that maybe they could get together and come back with something for both of them, but that didn't happen.
And that still may occur, and this at least sets the precedent of saying that here's a level of quality.
It's like the parking lot behind City Hall. Gravel, and I don't know how that happened in our city, so.
We have reached out, and I know some of our office is working, and Jeff asked us actually if we'd extend the wall a little bit over so Hillstone could tie into it, so we're making those efforts. We can't require them to do it, but we are trying to facilitate that.
Good. That's just what I wanted to know. Thanks.
Chuck, can you tell me how high the wall is?
We originally had it like 2 foot, and I think Jeff had us bring it up to about 3 foot so it would cover the cars. 4 foot at the columns, and then just slightly below.
3 in the center.
3 in the center.
To just give a little bit of detail to it.
And what kind of plantings are those? I mean, I obviously see the palm, but...
Yeah, palms and just kind of shrubberies and stuff like that.
I'd like to see that parking lot hidden more, to be quite honest, but... One voice. If we're oak trees, we're oak trees. Are we all of a sudden turning palm trees on 1792?
I think the wall height is comparable to the one you see down at Walgreens, which is kind of the, which is what we've, I want to say, I hesitate to call it a standard, but it's kind of it's kind of a wall height that we've accepted, and if we need a little more, then I'm happy to.
This is your baby. I don't want to see parking lots, and I'm not psyched about a parking lot.
I'm sure we can work with staff to make sure we get acceptable plant material in it to help screen that. So I think conceptually this is showing a level of landscaping that specific plants aren't called out, but.
Yeah, I think anybody knows any project we do, we always keep landscaping pretty high, but nice. And. I think we can make it attractive with the wall, nice landscaping in front of it. I mean, if we create a real big hedge in front of it, I don't know if that really looks that great either. So I think if we do the wall and appropriate landscaping and shape it, I think it's going to look pretty good. I mean, we intend on doing nice landscaping there.
Do you, as the applicant, have any questions or comments? You don't need to. I just didn't know if you had anything else you wanted to add to presentation.
No, I hope I achieve what you asked me.
We'll give you the right to answer any questions if those come up at the end. Commission discussion? I have no further public comment. Any citizens wishing to speak to us about this matter? Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. How do we vote? Quick, read the roll.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Mr. Eichmann, a resolution, please.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioner, this is a resolution of the City of Winter Park Forest supporting home rule and pension plan reforms.
I would move the resolution as presented. Is there a second?
Second.
those of you listening at home or in the audience, home rule is basically says cities should have the right to do what they want to do within their cities.
Seems basic,
but it kind of does. And yet our state dictates from time to time things that we need to do. So this is not meant to be antagonistic to the state, but supportive, I think, of work that's ongoing. And I'm assuming this is a model resolution from the Florida League?
No, it's just we took one off of another one
and then we'll modify it for us.
What are we doing with it?
We'll be sending it to our legislative delegation as well as the League of Cities for them to include in the lobbying that they do.
Okay.
We kept it. It's not bill specific. You know, there's a couple of bills proposed every day, but they change every day. So by the time we got it up there, we might be supporting a bill we don't agree with anymore. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like that, Randy. That's a good way to treat this because the general, and I'm just going to vote for this, obviously, the general emphasis of this is to give us the right to be able to work with our own teams about their benefits. That's what's being requested here. So. Okay, any further commission discussion? Open the floor for public comment if any citizens wish to speak to us about this matter. Seeing that, I'll close the floor for public comment. Any further commission discussion? I'll ask the clerk to read the roll, please.
Commissioner O'Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. We're going to go to commission reports. Vice Mayor O'Leary?
None, sir.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
I got a bunch. Here they are. Okay, I went to the ribbon cutting at the Hispanic Expo last Friday, or Thursday, whatever day that was. That was great. They had a wonderful turnout out there, so I would like to represent the city of Winter Park. I also did that at the Douglas Grand for somebody opening up a new business there. That was fun. I think we should let Tom talk about dinner on the Avenue because he was the most decorated, but it was another great evening, and I don't know how you could do this. I had a friend who was there from Windermere, and he said, we should be doing this in Windermere. I thought, we can't do this anywhere else. Okay. I also went to the house that we approved the redo of, which was absolutely wonderful. When I went in there, I couldn't believe what the neighbors were saying. The neighbors, first of all, were so excited that they had come in there and fixed that house up. And so we did a good job. Sometimes when we approve something, you wonder, okay, what's going to really happen here? This is a house that's an 1,100 square foot house. So they told me how many cubic square feet of trash they took out of there. It was amazing. So it was just the hoarder house that was just offensive for everybody. And we did a good job of solving for that problem. And thank you all staff for coming up with that solution. Also, I don't think we mentioned that a bunch of us were at the senior housing open house, and that was another fabulous thing. We're running this community.
100% full.
100% full, open that way. It's just so many neat things. They've got a great park there. I had gotten to go to the Dr. Phillips Center, so if you're sitting up here and you haven't gone yet, be sure you go see that because it will change what you think about what's going on with the arts. And then the last one, I'm not saying we should calm the neighborhoods, move in Brookshire, but I've had calls from people in both neighborhoods that are looking for calming devices
so that traffic
won't be such a problem. So I'm just bringing it here because when I get the calls on things like fences and how can we slow traffic down, I don't really know what to tell people. And I don't know where to send them. And I just want us to be able to figure out a way that we can at least, I mean, I know that you send people out and they're very helpful. Everybody you send out gives us great reports back. So that's what I do. And I think that's what our job is. But I just wanted to mention that that's what I've been hearing about. So maybe we just need to make it more accessible to people.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think traffic calming, having had education on a number of years ago, not from the city of Winter Park, but from another municipality. There's a lot of options, a lot of ways that could be done. I don't know what we do or don't tolerate as a city, and that might be something, especially as we continue to talk about cut through traffic, et cetera, that we may want to have a more broad conversation about. So,
I think that's a great idea.
I'd be willing to receive education on it. I don't know that the city staff have a specifically preferred approach, but from roundabouts to speed bumps to brick roads to everything, there's a lot of ways you can calm traffic.
Thanks.
Commissioner Mackin?
Two quick things. Randy, we've been getting the, and it's a little housekeeping thing, we've been getting the weekly updates, and can we have those sent to the Dropbox?
Can we have them electronically, too? Can we have them both ways?
Well, they tend to be of a size that takes a long time to bring it up on, at least for me, and if we could just have those in the Dropbox as well,
okay,
that'd be a huge help. And it's almost following up on Commissioner Sprinkle's just comment. I have noticed a number of police out more recently than I have in the past, checking the speed limits on roadways, and I think that's a great thing. It's a lot of residential neighborhoods. I've seen them out. I've noticed that.
And seatbelts.
So I like seeing that. So, Chief, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And that's all I have. Again, dinner on the Avenue was, once again, fabulous. I know I have a lot of fun.
I just want to echo Commissioner Mackin's comments. The dinner was a spectacular event. The creativity of our staff and the creativity of our citizens is truly amazing, and I'm glad I live in a city where our staff thinks about those things and make those kind of things happen, and kudos to everybody. I have nothing else to add. By acclamation, may we sit adjourned?
Thanks.
Thank you.
By acclamation, you all have a wonderful evening.